we will convene as the Local Transportation Commission. Oral communications, public comments. This portion of the meeting is an opportunity for members of the public to address the Local Transportation Commission on subjects relating to county business. No action can be taken on matters not listed on the agenda. Is anyone from the public who wishes to address the Local Transportation Commission? With that, I'll push on then to the consent agenda. These matters are expected to be routine and non-controversial and are usually approved by a single majority vote without discussion. Items can be removed from the consent agenda to be discussed and considered separately. Prior to approval of the consent agenda, the chair will announce that comments or questions will be taken from members of the public, staff, or the board on consent agenda items when the comment does not necessitate removing separate action. We have one item, 3.1, requests approval of regular meeting minutes of 9/18 of 2018. Does anyone wish to comment? Can I have a motion on the consent?
Motion to approve.
Second.
Motion and second. Comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
There is no unfinished business. I'll move to item 5, new business. 5.1, discussion and report to Caltrans District 10 staff regarding projects affecting Alpine County.
Scott Moss, Transportation Program Manager. Today we have the Gregoria Collins from District 10. She's the Regional Chief of Rural Planning, and she's here to ask to answer any questions from the Transportation Commissioners.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Gregoria Ponce. You guys can hear me okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Excellent, excellent. Good morning. I didn't realize I was first up. I thought we were going to hear a little bit of the SSAR. But with that in mind, will you be going first, Ryan, or no?
Okay. On the SSAR?
Right. I was just going by the agenda. That's fine. No, that's fine. Good morning. We were presented, Caltrans was presented with the SSAR recently, and we were given some questions as also to provide some preliminary feedback on the SSAR in terms of the finding. And just to define what the SSAR is, it's the Systemic Safety Analysis Report. Part of the inquiry also included 5 questions, so with that I'm actually going to delve into the questions that were sent to my office. If no one has objections with that, very well. So the first inquiry was the State Route 89 bridge project over Markleyville. There was concern with regards to timing for construction as well as utility involvement. We onboarded the concern with the project manager, Eric Chin, and 2 pieces of information came up. One is that construction is scheduled for December 2020. With that was the concern for coordination with utilities. Typically when the project development process, earlier than the construction phase, we engage utilities. And when we talk about utilities, we're looking at electrical, water, sewer. Sometimes there's utilities from services, safety services, primary services agencies. So we do outreach with regards to utilities to identify conflicts as well as potential relocation. So that will be occurring early on. And with respect to that, for that project, we'll be sure to also reach out to Alpine staff for coordination. The second inquiry was the bridge replacement project on State Route 50 that's scheduled for construction in 2019. The concern was the traffic management plan with the 1-lane closures and the 10-day full closures. Additionally, the draw of existing resources in terms of addressing the needs of the traffic management during construction. We onboarded that concern, reaching out to the project manager, Clark Perry, and it was clarified that a traffic management plan is in fact required for that project. That will include not only the detours that were identified, but accommodating emergency vehicles. So again, the traffic management plan is developed and vetted well before the actual construction phase. It's actually included as part of the contract when it goes out to bid, and typically when the contractor comes on board, it's further refined. For this particular project, that we're going to be looking at an extensive public information campaign across both jurisdictions. So we'll be looking at not just District 10, but District 3. We're aware of projects regionally occurring, so we want to minimize conflicts, not just with regards to information, but also support in terms of a very robust traffic management plan. We want to make sure that the motorists and businesses are fully informed about the project, the timing of the project, areas affected of the project. There'll be fact sheets put forward. And again, more refined plans will arise along as part of that extensive public information campaign. And we'll be working with Alpine staff as that comes forward. The third inquiry was involving State Route 88 and 89 in Markleyville with regards to a fatality. It was identified that there are high speeds occurring and looking for some improvements to lower those speeds for that area, and or any other type of improvements, really just kind of an exploratory. This inquiry has been submitted to our Office of Traffic Safety as well as Traffic Operations to take another look at that based on current data, and we'll be doing further investigation and working with Alpine staff for that in terms of input in initiating that safety investigation. Fourth inquiry regarding the Spur and Pickett's Junction closure. But State Route 88, and in particular, real-time noticing, trying to notice the traveling public and the locals as to closures and openings. This information was specifically submitted to our PIO because, again, this goes to public noticing, not just locally but regionally, looking at weather conditions as well as the roadway. The investigation with PIO has already started, and we'll be circling back with Alpine staff for additional feedback to further the framework for that investigation and get that information back out. What we currently use is social media. We look at Twitter. We do communications with regards to conditions, anticipated closures and openings. We tag local media as well and key stakeholders, Kirkwood Mountain Resort, agencies, jurisdictions, and we tag them as far as extending that message. So we do have something currently operating for that. There's also QuickMap and CHIN, our California Highway Information Network, and those are updated and available to the traveling public for real time. We are looking at additional developments as far as traffic management system elements, looking at sensors, changeable message signs, and cameras. For that route in the next couple of years. Wanted to recognize that there are some challenges even with looking at that, because how real time can one be being subject to inclement weather or roadway conditions in general, in addition to other variables that are unknown. But we'll certainly be circling back again with Alpine planning staff, providing the framework and see where we can refine that. And that'll be from our PIO office. There was another inquiry, Mormon Immigrant Trail to be opened earlier. That element, again, that was rolled forward to our traffic safety and traffic ops to see what we do now, what's the framework, and what are the conditions for opening and closing in terms of facilitating that request. And again, we'll be doing further investigation and circling back with Alpine staff for additional information for framework for that investigation. And we'll be getting back to the commission on that. Really, the last inquiry regarding trails is the BLM trail across State Route 89 at Turtle Rock Park Road. There was discussions, I understand, previously that brought up ADA requirements for trails, and the observation was made that there are numerous existing trails that cross 89 and 4 that do not meet ADA. So why then for this particular proposed improvement would that be needed? So I wanted to just start out with some basics. Federal Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA of 1990, along with its regulations, and the California Government Code, Section 4450, prescribe that facilities shall be made accessible to persons with disabilities. To comply with ADA, the 2010 ADA standards, as adopted by the U.S. Department of Justice, they shall apply to the designs of the California Department of Transportation facilities. Moreover, some of those provisions apply to the highway environments, such as sidewalks, pedestrian crossings, and trails for access. FHWA, Federal Highway Administration, has guidance on this, as does Caltrans via the Design Information Bulletin 8205, and I have shared that with your transportation project manager. While there may be numerous existing trails, as we've observed, that do cross the highway, new access facilities features are required to comply with ADA, even though the existing do not. And there is also a condition that should existing facilities be in any way modified with regards to transportation, then those would need to be considered to be brought forward for ADA compliance. Having said that, there was a question to other options. Now, with regards to other options, I understand that the transportation project manager and the group at large is looking to amend the proposed access to see what can be done to address the ADA. I would suggest looking at Section 3.0, Article 3.1 of the current guidance on procedures and review process for projects, including accessibility design standards, modifications, and or exceptions. I think this is an area that may assist with regards to navigating that project. I understand that the federal lead for this project is the BLM. It wasn't made clear to me whether or not their documentation or their efforts established or addressed any ADA with regards to coming forward to the county with this project in terms of any permitting. This may assist the CEQA lead with regards to any encroachments or navigating through the state process on that. And I will be circling back with Alpine staff to get clarification on that and provide additional guidance.
Very good. Any questions for board members?
Are you done?
I have one last item, and that's, thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I have one last item. That is the winter closure gate. With regards to concerns to move the gate, how can those concerns be addressed? And again, having the project move forward. The last one is monitor pass and rerouting the upper highway section. Both of those have been forwarded to our traffic ops and traffic safety to evaluate that and give back to the commission as well as Alpine staff. I'll be circling back with Alpine staff to get initial feedback as part of the framework to start that investigation. And now I've concluded. Thank you.
Questions?
Yes, I do. Yeah, you just mentioned the winter closure gate at Monitor Pass, and you're doing an investigation. How long or how much longer can we wait to get some kind of an answer? I mean, this has been ongoing for quite some time, and it comes to the surface quite a bit. And we're just wondering how long it's going to take for an answer from Caltrans.
Yeah, we have approximately 11 investigations ongoing. I didn't, unfortunately, in time get that list of 11 investigations. If it's one of those, then the response would be imminent. Again, having gotten these inquiries as of late, some of them I'm aware are already in the pipeline, but I will certainly get back to you no later than by COB tomorrow with regards to where that is.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Further questions? Yes.
With respect to the trail crossing from Turtle Rock Park and Highway 89-4 and the ADA requirements, what is Caltrans considering part of the trail? Is it just an easement that would allow the trail to cross?
Well, the project is the BLM, so we would look at what plans are being put forward in terms of what the trail is. When we look at the facility, we're looking at where the ingress is with regards to our facility. and how that's...
So it's essentially the right-of-way.
Correct. Which is why my question is, what does it look like, and have that further discussion in terms of what are we looking at existing-wise. That hasn't come forward to my office for planning or intergovernmental review yet. So that's something I've been discussing with the transportation project manager.
So asking the transportation project manager, I mean, am I wrong in thinking that the ADA will essentially simply apply to where they get through the fence on both sides? And, you know, maybe the trail from there to the pavement on both sides has to be a little bit better condition than the trail that comes up to the fence.
Scott Haas, that's correct. Anything that's in the Caltrans right-of-way, District 10 is saying that that has to meet ADA requirements. And ADA, for Caltrans standard, would be a paved path that, and it just can't be gravel, it needs to be paved. And it would also have to be, meet all the ADA standards, widths and grades.
Okay, well, that to me, that simplifies the thing considerably, because you're only looking at between the two right-of-ways, the boundaries on either side.
Offer another comment on that. The challenge with that is on the west side of the road, when you come down from Turtle Rock, that cut, that's a fairly steep bank. So in order to get a trail in there that meets ADA standards would be challenging. Thank you for the word.
But it's just a matter of, instead of going straight down, going sideways, isn't it?
And probably doubling back.
Or switchbacks.
Switchbacks. That'd be fun.
Okay. Any further questions?
Yes, I have a lot. Go ahead. Back on that point as well, the Caltrans has also told us that that's actually a four-lane highway there, so even the easement is much larger than the what's out there right now because of the four-lane highway plan, which I don't know if any of us would be alive if there's ever a need for a four-lane highway between Woodford's and Markleyville. But there is a need for that trail to be completed, and that little section is a blockage by Caltrans not allowing that, having required an ADA. For the group that's trying to do it, there's no funds for them to come up with it. It's a very small group that's building those trails. So I have some other questions. Though, back to Kathy Rakow's comment about Monitor Pass and that, well, that's actually been 3 years now that we got a letter saying that it was imminent. So it's kind of amazing how it's been delayed and delayed and delayed, but it hasn't come to any kind of conclusion, even though we were told in that last letter 3 years ago that it was planning to be done the next year. The other question is on Pickett's Junction. You wanted to talk about the Pickett's Junction 88 and 89, the western junction. You don't live here, so I'll have to try and make it easier for you on our local names. That closure is only seasonal when the mountain is closed up ahead at the avalanche path, and at the road closure at Red Lake grade, or Red Lake Creek area. That area also would use a traffic cam that would show you that when it's backed up and backed up for over a mile, that there's no transportation for the people that live in that areas to get on in and off the highway because of that backup. And that backup then relates to the backup back at Pickett's, because then the highway patrol doesn't send more people up there because that closure just adds to the problem. Somehow those local information that you were talking about, the quick maps, they don't have access to that in those areas from the internet. So some of those places are going to have to be, either they have a Verizon hookup or they have no chance for it. And even during inclement weather, the Verizon hookup is not that reliable for them to have that idea. Your outreach to the county, to the businesses of Vail, the ski area operator, needs to be a little bit more than timely. It needs to be ahead of the time, so they can actually get their customers to know that there's going to be a road closure, and the estimation by Caltrans to open it up went maybe 8 hours, and there's no need to wait there for 8 hours. But Caltrans does have some estimates on sometimes when they do their avalanche control. Sometimes they don't, simply because of the amount of snow that falls that time. Then the safety issues at 88 and 89, you just alluded to a little bit, but a speed consideration, especially for the people that are pulling out of 89 from Markleyville to Woodfords and then going on to 88 from the eastbound traffic, is trying to make the grade. And they're trying to make it at speed or if even higher than speed going through that intersection. It makes it very challenging for the people to try to merge with that traffic with that speed, the speed of the traffic coming uphill. Speed control, 45 miles an hour perhaps, congested area signs, that kind of thing was what I was thinking about. And then you said the bridge on Highway 50, and I may have caught something here, it's 10-day closures, plural?
It's 10-day, yeah. I originally read early on there's one 10-day closure, I think, is what I read in the inquiry.
Okay, and then you used the word plural, so I was used the plural of 10-day closures, so I was concerned if there was more than 10 days. And I know that project's been changed several times, how long that closure is going to happen. Is the reroute going to be on Iron Mountain or Marmon and Rangoon Trail, or is it going to be Highway 49 to 88? From Placerville to Jackson, is that the reroute that they're proposing?
I'm not certain at this time. I'd have to pull the standard for the TMP for that, and I'd be happy to send that to you.
Okay, because that makes a big difference for the traffic, especially on the lower part of Highway 50 from Placerville up for that, let's say, just the Apple Hill area. But it would also make a difference for us, as well as we're traveling in and out of our county, which highways are going to be the most traveled for us. And I'm sure the commercial traffic won't be let on the Marmon Immigrant Trail, but I'm sure that there'll be a lot of wannabe travelers that want to be on that trail, because it'll be at least 25 miles less to do that versus going the other way. And that's all I have right now. Thank you very much. You've been giving us more information than we've had in years. Thank you.
Okay. Any further comments?
One question. The next item on the agenda is the systematic safety analysis report. And assuming that we all approve it, is this something that Caltrans will follow? Because I know there are a lot of things. There's a problem here, there's a problem there, and so on like that. And as far as I know, this report is the first time that looked at all of the problems in the county and put some priorities on them as to what should be done. But we can't do it. Most of it is Caltrans' responsibility.
In terms of the systemic, the SSAR, we do use that in terms of framework for identifying projects and improvements. And I think that will touch more in terms of what the purpose is and how we will use it. And I think we'll probably be covering that a little bit.
Yeah, and if you have comments on that, maybe we can have the presentation first.
Right,
yeah.
And that's what I would So if I can touch base on that after?
Yes, please stay for that.
I will do that. Thank you again.
I just had two comments.
Yes.
First, we've had a number of semi-truck wrecks up on Highway 4 that closed the Highway 4 for a certain amount of time. There was a sign on either end of Highway 4 that trucks over a certain length are not recommended. Over on Highway 108, Mono County passed a resolution that restricted those semi-trucks from going up there. They would get a ticket. So I want to make that request that they restrict semi-trucks from going over Highway 4. And something you probably are not real familiar with is at the beginning of the snow season, at the end of the winter season, there's generally an emergency meeting at Cables Lake Caltrans, where the fire department, the sheriff's department, California Highway Patrol, Caltrans, and others participate in. And I just wanted to make sure that Terry and Rick, you guys are invited to that meeting. It's probably already scheduled. But with that.
I have one more question I forgot about. We've had a runaway truck at the bottom of 89 at Woodfords Canyon. This would suggest that maybe a truck runaway ramp at the bottom of that, just before Caltrans, might have saved that man's life.
I do have to compliment Caltrans and the contractor, because they've gone in with Department of Wildlife and redid it, did more excavation of the hazardous materials, and now it's reseeded. Very good job. It took a while.
Just to clarify, that Woodford's Canyon, and consider a runaway lane or a catch lane for that?
Yeah, it's on the bottom of Woodford's Canyon. It's Highway 89 between the two junctions of Pickett's, the western junction and the eastern junction. And it's right before the Caltrans. If you came from Stockton, you drove over it.
I will take that back to our traffic ops as a recommendation.
Thank you very much.
Great.
You're welcome.
Nothing more on 5.1. We'll push on then to 5.2. Draft approval of the 2018 Amador and Alpine County Systematic Safety Analysis Report.
Scott Moss. Today we have Dan Bloomquist from Mark Thomas. He's going to give us a brief presentation about the Systemic Safety Analysis Report and with a PowerPoint.
Very good.
Yeah, my name is Dan Lundquist. I'm with Mark Thomas. We were the consultants who were brought on by Amador, Alpine, and Calaveras counties to complete the systematic safety analysis report for all three counties. So I want to touch on briefly the intent of the SSAR, as we call it, is to look at overall collisions across a network of roadways. So essentially, we're trying to, from the top down, identify systemic safety issues and identify systemic, essentially lower cost countermeasures that would compete more, that would compete both for additional funding for safety improvements, but also try to bring down the number of fatal and severe collisions across a region. This is a little bit different than normal safety improvement analysis, which in the past is concentrated on focus locations, hotspots. You know, a fatality happened at this location, let's figure out a way to address that. Over time, that approach is found to, yes, remedy those specific issues, but especially in rural areas where roadway conditions can be systemic across there, the locations of severe and fatal injuries can sometimes be somewhat random across the roadway network. So addressing at one location isn't going to prevent the next one from happening further down the road. And so we're trying to address ways to improve the entire system at once. Or at least larger portions of it than just one spot location. And of course, our intent here, where there's ways to improve safety that go beyond engineering, our focus is on identifying engineering countermeasures, but the other types of ways of improving safety on roadways, enforcement, education, and emergency response issues, were touched on a report, but really weren't the primary focus of it. To dive into some of the information that we did collect for this effort, we looked at collisions data, and our primary source was the state's SWTRS database, which compiles collision records from multiple agencies, law enforcement agencies, sheriff, primarily highway patrol in this area. And we looked at those collisions and located them across your network. So we essentially identified collisions throughout Alpine County. Primarily, our focus ended up being the state routes because that's where the vast majority of incidents are happening up here in the county. Only less than 10% of collisions happen on the local county roadways, and just a snapshot of that, you know, two of those were fatals on county roads that we looked at, and we looked at a 5-year window of collisions from 2013 through 2017, which is the last year that official data is available. Now, some of the interesting findings about this, we looked at overall the types of collision factors. So what were the kind of activities by the drivers that were leading to the collisions, not exactly what resulted from it. And looking from the top down, we identified what are the most frequently types of factors, and by and large, it's unsafe speed. Now, that's a common aspect of rural roadways. Higher design speeds on the roadways than encountering unforeseen conditions leads to the collisions. In comparison to some of the other issues, and from a statewide basis, we looked at the state's strategic highway safety plan. Found obviously speed-related collisions were above normal for Alpine County. But some of the other areas of concern that were pointed out to us, driving under the influence / biking under the influence, that's DUI / BUI, was below statewide averages, as well as pet bike-related collisions were below statewide averages. As a counterpoint to this, and which is where we kind of more focus more as far as the development of engineering countermeasures, is what is the collision type? What essentially, what is the result of the collision? You see from this, the majority of collisions are the single occupant, the single vehicle type collisions in the county. We're talking about the hit object collisions, where people have run off the road, run into a tree, run into an embankment, go over the side of the hill, or overturn collisions, where they flip the car on the existing roadway. And those generally come about because either lack of notification about the hazards that are approaching on the roadway, or excessive speed. And then drilling down, we wanted to start identifying them. Before I go on, I wanted to talk about this a little bit more. These types of collisions can be addressed by a multitude of different types of engineering countermeasures. And our report includes a more comprehensive list, but by and large, the most ideal systemic countermeasures that we've identified for application on county roadways include signing upgrades, essentially improved curve warning signage going, approaching and through curves, increasing roadway friction through high incident curves, where we're saying you're having lots of incidents and you already have a lot of signage, what's the next step up rather than just realigning the roadway, which can be very cost prohibitive. So those are called high friction surface treatments. Improving guardrails, bringing them up to current standards is a common need on rural roadways. Those don't actually reduce collisions, because what you're doing, adding guardrails, you're putting an obstruction within the clear recovery zone, but what they do is they reduce the severity of collisions. And then adding rumble strips, which is obviously an issue of concern in the county, and we acknowledge that, but it's a common application that Caltrans uses in a lot of their state facilities to reduce runoff the road type collisions. And if you go back to our original map here, what we did is looking from the collisions as a whole, we identified where were the highest incident locations across the county, trying to identify focus locations in which to drill down with our ideas about the recommended countermeasures to identify specific projects that could therefore be carried forward to get funds for making the improvements. Looking across the county, focusing on the state routes, we actually identified three specific roadway segments that were our focus segments for identification of projects. That included high portions of Highway 88 between the Amador County line and then through Red Lake. So essentially that area that includes the icebox curve area. Then a portion of the 88-89 segment between the two junctions with 89 was another segment that came up as the higher incident locations. And these were judged based off of the crash rate, which is a measure of the number of collisions on a corridor and the volume. Generally for a rural roadway, the state would average crash rate for two-way rural roads around 1.0. So these are the ones that are slightly above average. And then we also looked at the crash cost. So that's a measure of the economic impact associated with, you know, a fatal collision, a severe incident, or a severe collision, or going down to a property damage. So you add all those up, that adds up to the total crash cost on those segments of those collisions. And then one specific intersection we were asked to look for, is something that's been brought up already, was the intersection of Highway 89 South from 88 to Markleyville with Highway 88, and to see if we could identify specific countermeasures for each of the applications there. One of the main recommendations we came up for report, and this was common across all three counties, was to proceed with a roadway safety and signing audit and sign upgrade project. What this project would do is essentially scan the existing signs along a roadway, quantify their current condition, make sure they have nighttime visibility, make sure they're in the right position and it's the right type of sign, and also make sure the curve warning speeds were appropriate for the curve that they're notifying. So essentially this uses a combination of GPS technology and a system called CARS, which we use to scan, drive along a roadway and assess what is the appropriate safe speed to go through a curve. Kind of essentially is replacing the old ball bake indicator. So you do this along a network of roadways, come up with recommendations on what advisory speeds are, review the sign placements and conditions, and come up with recommendations to upgrade signs. And so the follow up on this is then you ask for the money from the AISA program to go out and actually make the changes to the signs that are identified. This is one of the higher BC ratios, and benefit to cost was really the key factor that leads into whether or not a project would be eligible for safety funds through the HSIP program. The HSIP is a Highway Safety Improvement Program, and that's the funds that are administered by Caltrans that come from the federal government to improve roadway safety. and that's the main program that's accessible to local agencies from a safety countermeasure standpoint. And this one came up with a very high BC ratio, but again, it was primarily, it's all on state routes. So the driving force behind this is that this information really needs to get passed on to the state for them to further review and judge if they can come up with their own project to address these issues. One of the other key types of projects we looked at several locations on our focus segments was the high implementation, the high friction surface treatment. So essentially what that is a surface treatment that goes beyond like your normal roadway asphalt pavement or chip sealing to try to improve the roadway friction going around curves. Essentially what it's been proven to do is reduce runoff the road collisions going around high incident curves. And it's used as more of a preliminary measure, a measure that goes beyond roadway signing and striping, but is less costly than realigning the roadway, which is the next level up. And this is something that's been shown to be a
another question.
Benefit.
Yeah, is there any of that available around here close so we can look at it?
Unfortunately, I don't believe District 10 has done it yet. There are some studies published on Caltrans' website you can look at where they've done it in other jurisdictions. So Caltrans has implemented this elsewhere. And they actually do have a set aside in a sense for this. And it still requires a BC ratio, but there's funds set up so they can actually, from the HIP program, to dedicate to this type of project.
So, what is Caltrans system? It was 3?
Oh, yeah, District
3. Would they have some of it?
The one that we found, which was the I specifically know about, was up in District 1, I believe in Humboldt County.
Yeah. Well, on the coast.
And there's issues with this, and this is why we didn't come up with a more of a definite project here, because we looked at specific curves along portions of the Highway 88 and found some areas where it could be applied, where we're still seeing curves with high numbers of incidents, and it's still already signed, it looks like appropriate, you know, curve warning signs. So this is the next step up on that kind of safety treatment on these curves. But because of the high altitude of Alpine County, you need essentially at least a double layer. You also need to account for the condition of the existing roadway pavement. So in a lot of these places, the roadway pavement would need to be resurfaced before you even apply the surface, otherwise it won't last very long, and it will be hard to maintain. And so that led it to being not a qualifying HSIP application for this section. But it's something that could be considered possibly in the future with further analysis, maybe cutting down the limits a little bit, or provided Caltrans for further study as a recommendation. And then, talking about some of the other potential projects we've identified as applicable guardrails. This is a good one for locations where there isn't a high documented number of incidents, but say the county's got local roadways with guardrails that need to be upgraded. The HSIP program actually has a set-aside where you don't need to have a benefit-cost ratio such as it, but you can apply up to for $1 million to replace and bring up guardrails up to current standards. But that's only for existing guardrails. That's not for installing new ones. And then obviously we looked at rumble strips, being aware of what the county's policies are regarding rumble strips' impacts on bicycle traffic. We didn't lead to any recommendation projects here, and we know Caltrans have been working with you already or rumble strips on portions of 88 and 89. But the key factors there being for centerline rumble strips, you need to have a minimum width from the centerline rumble strip to the edge pavement of 14 feet to install one. These are the ASHTO standards on this. And for edge line rumble strips, you need to have 4 feet clear from the edge of your rumble strip to the edge of pavement or your guardrail or whatever for an edge line rumble strip are the standards for those applications.
Just not that wide.
Right. And it's not that wide. And then just want to brush through this because we talked about this a little briefly already, Caltrans, but we did look at collisions on Highway 4. Very few were in our database of collisions that we found, so we didn't really come up with specific project recommendations here. We obviously looked a total number of 5 collisions on basically Highway 4 between over the pass, over Bevins Pass, down the Bear Valley. There were obviously not enough collisions to support proceeding with any kind of HSIP application for this. And just the distributed nature just was indicative of what we've seen throughout the county, which is overturn, run off the road type collisions. We did follow up with Caltrans about the idea of restricting putting a full restriction on larger vehicles, essentially vehicles over 30 foot from kingpin to rear axle, which is like the current restriction that's posted on Caltrans website, which is what we're showing here. The change from not advisable to not allowed is going to require working not only Caltrans, but the CHP, other local law enforcement agencies. You're going to have to bring them on board because you have to bring in the enforcement aspect of this. And you have to get all these agencies on board in order to enforce that restriction. It's not simply going out and changing the sign.
I don't think that would be difficult. I mean, it's a real problem.
Yeah. But yeah, you'll have to, yeah, essentially put the bring together the group to get it worked on. And then on the good news front, and this wasn't mentioned earlier, but we found out from Larry Hernandez that there is a project underway being in the planning and design stages for the Cadillac curve area, which would widen out paving on either side of the main curve where vehicles are getting stuck. The intent, I believe, is to allow 2 30-foot trucks to be able to pass through there. We asked for, I don't have the details on it.
Seriously?
Right now. The intent was for that I was informed was it was supposed to happen next year.
I want pictures.
So we put the request out for Caltrans for more information, but it hasn't been available. I'll obviously share it with Scott when we find out more.
You're not joking, right?
That's what we were.
Okay. Before. Yeah, that's pretty comical.
I'm optimistic.
Questions?
No. The number of collisions that is in the database of people who have reported it. So one of the most significant part for our county that we're ahead of the whole state, because I guess there isn't even a state average, is the animal collisions. Mm-hmm. We're 3.7, and it's kind of a remarkable number. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine that's probably at least half of what our deer collisions are in the county. Most people aren't reporting those out.
I would assume, yeah, they're probably not if they're not experience substantial damage or they're not going to the police to report that. So it's got to go to the police before it'll get into our analysis.
So my point being is if it's that low and underreported and it's still higher than the average, is there other mitigation to try and stop that other than slower speeds and wider road easements, trees cut back to the easement completely?
Yeah. Basically, yeah, you're seeing increased sight distance, increased setback, so people can see the animals emerging from into the roadway further away so they can react. Beyond that, it goes to the much higher level of the whole animal roadway crossing aspect, which none of that is identified as an eligible countermeasure within the HCIP program. So,
well, we actually have some deer migration tunnels here in the county,
okay.
but we don't really have any much of that. That was kind of like an afterthought, I think, when they put that road in. And they say, oh, we don't want the deer to cross here, so we'll use this strip, this drainage, and it works pretty well. There's hardly any accidents there now where there used to be significant ones. Mm-hmm. But we have a lot of other spots in the county where the migration routes are almost predictable.
Okay.
And I use almost in big letters.
Yeah, and obviously, by and large, I think animal collision data was not widely available to us, so we didn't identify any specific locations. Looking at this, where it's like, oh, this seems to be a hot spot for collisions. You saw the odd report where somebody maybe got hurt, and therefore CHP got called out.
Very good.
Thank you.
Oh yes. Go ahead.
Thank you. I think you got a couple of these questions by email.
Mm-hmm.
The report's dated September the 4th.
Yes.
And consistently refers to Highway Safety Improvement Program Cycle 9,
yeah.
Which ended.
August 30th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a cycle 10?
Not reported to us yet. Not that we're available. Generally, HCIP cycles are 1 to 2 years. Obviously, it's federally funded, so that goes with federal funds. And cycle 10 has not been announced yet.
Does the report need any adjustment?
It will be corrected.
Okay.
To refer to cycle 1 being closed, and then
okay, good.
The next cycle being the next 1 to 2 years.
Okay. Next question was in table 3.5 on report page 9, second last row, it says Alpine El Dorado County, talking about Luther Pass. Shouldn't that be?
Yeah, another correction.
Okay.
So So we'll finalize this for the signature page when it comes back out, so those corrections will be made.
Okay, and the last thing I have, I think it's a great report, and I think we should use it, but almost all of this applies to Caltrans.
Yes.
And we have essentially no input, and we certainly can't afford to pay for it, pay for the work recommendations. Am I missing something here, or is this really a report that we should be using to convince Caltrans where they should be concentrating their efforts?
I think that's really the focus right now, is working with Caltrans. We share the report with them across the three counties. The past process we've already undertaken at a couple of locations in Calaveras is we've broken out specific data that we collected already and shared it with D10 Office of Traffic Safety. And the onus is on them because it's their funds that they come through and do a further analysis based on what we saw as far as the collisions out there, what our recommendations were, and then they decided that becomes a project for them using their own funds.
I can't agree more with your point that you made in your presentation that because we don't have a very high density of accidents, just because of an accident in one place doesn't mean that's where it's going to be the next time. So we should concentrate on the overall pattern.
Yeah, and I think that's why we consistently across these three counties, which are primarily rural, that roadside safety and signing audit, we found is really a good one to cover, give you the most bang for your buck. It definitely has by far the highest benefit cost ratio of any projects we looked at. It looks at signage and roadside, and potentially if you expand the amount of data collected to other roadside safety elements beyond just curb signs, other regulatory signs, other warning signs, you can look at all of those and bring that in there, but there is a local match. And other counties were not willing to pay for that local match for the work on the state routes, so we did make applications for City of Angels Camp for just their local roadways, and then for Amador County. I take it back, Amador County decided not to proceed with it. So there was no application for Amador.
We're pushing on then. Your request is for approval of this plan.
I would move for approval with the required updates, corrections.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor. Can I have a second? Second. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It passed. We'll go back to our reconvene as the regular Board of Supervisors.